Welcome everybody to this Hedge Fund Marketing Mechanics audio expert interview. Today we have with us Tim Moore from BDO Consulting. Tim is a certified fraud examiner and head of investigative due diligence, the investigative due diligence practice actually, at BDO Consulting. And we're going to be conducting this short interview with Tim to get kind of a due diligence perspective on what hedge fund managers could be doing better to raise more capital. But if during this call or afterwards, if you'd like to do more research on, you know, Tim's firm or what they do and the services they provide, their website is bdoconsulting.com. And we'll repeat that again at the end of this call. But if you want to do research on that while listening to the interview, feel free. And Tim, thank you for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Great. Well, just to start with, how did you first kind of break into, you know, doing due diligence on, you know, individual hedge fund managers and members of hedge fund teams? How did you get first, you know, started down that road?
Well, I've been conducting and or managing investigations as a whole for in excess of 20 years, starting my career with an international private investigative company, and from there moving on to a large commercial bank where I was in charge of investigations by the time I left and found my way into the public accounting world. But I've always been providing investigative due diligence services, either as part of an investigation or as a standalone piece as itself. The world of alternative investments has always been a piece that we've done work in and that we've provided the investigative due diligence services in, and that would, you know, be along the lines of looking into matters with regard to private equity, fund of funds, and fund hedge funds themselves. And the work that we do, the investigative due diligence performances that we provide, investigative due diligence services that we provide with regard to fund managers are on behalf of the investors or fund of funds, so either institutional investors, endowments, or fund of funds.
I see.
So we've been doing that at BDO for the past 6 to 7 years. I would say that of our total investigative due diligence practice, it's probably a 60-40 split between 60% we're doing for other transaction-based or investigative needs where we're looking at backgrounds of individuals and entities, and the remainder in the alternative investment field.
Okay. All right. And are there certain things that, you know, when you guys are doing investigations on managers or research on a manager that someone might invest in, are there certain things you look for to make sure that that hedge fund manager has invested enough in their own business? Is that ever part of the research process? For example,
No, that's not part of our process. What we're looking for is really tailored to the client or the individual requesting the background to be done.
Mm-hmm.
For the most part, to put it in very general terms, we're looking at publicly available information as well as other reputational information so that the investor and or client has a full picture of the people who are going to be making the investment decisions.
I see. That makes sense. So what type of reputational information is being analyzed by these institutional investors and fund-to-funds? I think many hedge fund managers, they would expect a background check, but besides checking in whether they got their degree or not, I think most would be kind of in the dark of what reputational factors would be investigated.
So we're looking at a few different things. We're looking to see, one, is the information that they present about themselves, things that are contained in a bio, a CV, or even in some instances, a questionnaire, the information that they are providing, we're checking the veracity of that information to see whether or not it's truthful. So, yes, you mentioned education. We look at education. We look to see that they received the degrees they said they received. We look at employment history. We then also look to see whether or not are they licensed? Are they required to be licensed? Did they ever hold a license through FINRA or other regulatory agencies? And if they did have a license with any of those agencies, what's the, were there any Was there any issues? Were there anything filed? Was there anything filed against under that license or against that individual? So we're looking to see what's the background with regard to the licensing. From there, and moving into more into additional public areas, we're looking at criminal record history. We're looking at civil history. How many times have they been a named party of an article of litigation, either as a plaintiff or a defendant? What's the nature of those suits? Do they have a personal bankruptcy in their background? Do they, the entities that they were involved in, or maybe where they had started their career or been in other places during other times in their career, have those entities been involved in issues? Not necessarily them themselves, but have they been affiliated or associated with an entity that's had some sort of negative press? And then we look at media. We look at press reports. We look at media reports. We look to see what is being publicly said about the individual. So that's really exhausting the public record side. From the reputational side, starts with references. Everybody can provide a reference, and the reference that you usually provide is going to probably say nothing but good things about it to you. We try to develop references. We look for additional people. People that you may have crossed paths with, the fund manager may have crossed paths with during their time, during their career, that can give us some additional information about their background. And then you try to corroborate that information if you can. The important thing for us is everything that we present back to a client is corroborated, and it can stand alone. It can stand up, and if you've ever reached a level of somebody ever questioned the information that was provided in the report, it can stand up to that questioning.
Right. Okay. So it sounds like that one lesson that someone who's running either a smaller or mid-sized hedge fund could take out of that is that they should probably treat every potential current and past investor with a lot of respect and honesty, even if there's a conflict at some point or a disagreement. It sounds like you definitely don't want to burn any bridges in this industry, or it's going to come up within that type of research, most likely.
That's correct. You know, look, everybody, myself and you included, we all have a footprint in the public record. We've all been involved in issues, not always negative, but there's things that happened, and that's normal, and that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. And the important thing is that, if you're asked information about your background, don't leave things out, because that just opens up the next question: why did you leave this out? Now, if it was something that was dated and you forgot about it, it's explainable, but you want to make sure that the information you provide is accurate to the best of your knowledge. And anything that happens, within your career, you just want to, if you act in a manner that's treating people with respect, you're not burning your bridges. Look, nothing's going to be perfect, and people are going to be upset. And I'm sure on the investment side of things, there are going to be people who are going to be upset. And you can't control that. But, you operate in a way that you can go to, you can go to bed at night and feel that you did everything above board and proper.
Right.
If people are upset, we're upset, there's nothing you can do about that, then there's really nothing to be concerned about.
Right. Okay. What about other types of public record, like credit history or driving records? Is that too detailed for what you guys look at, or is that something where if somebody, has horrible credit, they should be worried that maybe that's going to hurt their, their research that's done by a firm like yourself?
Well, we're going to do credit reports is an interesting piece, because we're not going to look at credit reports unless we have authorization to do so from the fund manager. So we're going to be asking for a release to be signed before we do anything like that.
Okay.
Your credit reports, yes. I'll take a step aside for a second and tell you that each investor, each fund to fund, has their own risk tolerance. So what may be of concern to one is most likely, may not be of a concern to somebody else.
Sure.
So, and then that risk tolerance sets up the level or depth of background information that we're going to gather and we're going to report. So, for example, you mentioned driving records. Well, for some, driving record's not important. For others, it's going to be extremely important because what if there's a driving history that shows a tendency for recklessness?
Right.
Some people may make the decision, I don't know that I want to put my money with somebody who acts in that manner.
Right.
Others may say, okay, it goes with the territory or for whatever it may be. They'll come up with their own reason why that's not a big concern of mine.
Sure.
One of the things that come up, and you see, you know, I wouldn't say often, but you see it more often than other issues, is DUIs or driving under the influence.
Right.
Happens, but how often did it happen? When did it happen? So
right.
Was it when you were 18 years old and you're in college and you did something foolish and, you know, you haven't done anything since then? Or did it happen 4 times in the last 3 years?
Right.
Those are going to affect people. Those things will affect people's decisions differently. You take things that you find you have to take them as they come in. You have to take them as each individual and deal with it as an individual issue.
Okay.
You can't make general statements that anybody with DUIs, I'm not going to do business with. Well, that may not, you know, there's always a reason why maybe you should.
Right.
Not to, you know, talk lightly about driving under the influence, because it's something it should not be done, and it hurts people and it hurts others and it hurts family members, it hurts yourselves. But with that said, some people have a different tolerance for it.
Right.
So
right.
Blanket statements of what you will accept are usually, you know, they're hard to live by.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. And what about like social media pages? Maybe somebody has a Facebook page and they're a hockey coach for their son and, you know, they talk to family members on there. I mean, should hedge fund managers be worried about a personal Facebook page which doesn't market their hedge fund at all, so they know they're not scared that way, but when it comes to due diligence research, you know, is something like that or some comment someone else makes on their wall going to hurt them in a social media space?
I would use this simple thing. If you don't want somebody to see it, then you shouldn't be putting it on any social media. You shouldn't be putting it on LinkedIn. You shouldn't be putting it on Facebook. You shouldn't be putting it on MySpace. And you shouldn't be putting it on Twitter.
Right.
It's just, if you don't want anybody to see it, and if it's something that is going to affect your business or affect you personally, then don't put it out there.
Right. Right.
You know, the our social media sites search, yes. Yeah, it's a very simple answer. The stuff
okay.
is put out there, and you have to take the approach that if I put it out there, somebody's going to see it.
Okay.
So
all
if
right.
you think about it, just think about it, right? It's almost it's a 7-second delay. Think of it that way. Before you hit send, read it and think about whether or not you want it out there. Somebody sends
yeah.
your friend request, and you hadn't seen that person in 15, 20, 30 years. Think about it. Do you want to accept that? How is it going to affect you when somebody looks into your background and sees this type of a friend? You just have to think that through. You may be fine. It's my personal life. My personal life doesn't have anything to do with my business side, and this is something that I want to be able to do to keep in touch with friends. Okay, that's fine. Just understand what can happen with that.
Okay. And, that makes sense. I mean, I think that it's something that's obvious once you think about it, but maybe people don't realize, you know, that it's really easy to find those online social media type conversations. You know, they show up everywhere in Google and everywhere else. So, okay, what about...
Think of one other piece, though. Think of,
mm-hmm.
put on your Facebook page, you're a fund manager, and you have a hobby of flying. Okay?
Right.
You like to fly. And you're constantly seeing pictures on there, and you're seeing posts. Now, posts all have dates and timestamps on them, or
right.
writings to your status. All your statuses have a timestamp. Now, somebody looks and goes, wow, spending a lot of time up in the air flying. How are they managing that money if they're doing that?
Because right.
That's things that people, I don't think through.
Right. Yeah, for sure. Or if you posted 5 status updates to Twitter during the day when you should be watching the portfolio, that combined with other things might make someone wonder, how committed you really are. Okay. I had a client once who ran a hedge fund. It was growing, somewhat successful, but he was a little bit self-conscious about the fact that even though he was good at what he was doing, he never graduated from high school. I don't believe he even had a GED. And while many people on this call might have graduated from high school, maybe some of you didn't finish college, etc. So I wonder, in your research, obviously that would come up, but do you see clients many times, you know, if they didn't finish that college degree or high school degree, is that a huge ding for most people? Or is that kind of like, well, you know, they're still going to look at the whole picture because the matter of the fact is, you know, trading portfolios aren't based on SAT scores. It's based on your ability to manage risk and run the portfolio. So I wonder, how big of an impact does that have on the due diligence process typically?
You know, for us, it's a piece of information, and we don't make the decisions.
Okay.
So we present the information to the client, and the client makes a decision as to what they're going to do with it.
Okay.
The only thing I can say is that people do, for some people, it's a, you know, look at it as a job interview. You come in, you don't have a college degree. Does that mean you can't do your job? No, but that may be a qualifying piece of information that they want to have. So I think people are going to treat it differently.
Sure.
But, you know, my own personal is that, you know, you take the package as a whole.
Yeah. Okay.
But I have not heard of anybody dinging somebody because they didn't go back and they didn't finish their college degree or they didn't move on to a master's or they didn't even finish high school.
Okay.
I haven't heard of it, and we're not involved in that decision.
Okay. And I can't imagine a DDQ that doesn't ask for the full education or bios of the team, but if for some reason a fund-to-fund made an investment decision off a very brief DDQ, and, you know, they did ask some due diligence questions, you do have a phone call, but they never explicitly ask something like, did you graduate from high school, or did you go to college and earn a college degree? If they don't, maybe it's something else in your background that you would bring up if the question was asked and you weren't going to lie about it, but nobody explicitly asked that question. Do you, I mean, from your perspective, because you're the one that does a lot of this investigative due diligence, is it always better just to bring out that skeleton up front, and whether they would have ever found that out or not, it's just much better to just have that out there in front and just be 100% up front? Or is it such a competitive industry, you know, and the client might not have cared anyways, but now that you brought it up, it's going to be some negative thing they look at when they consider whether to invest with you or not? Like, what would be your kind of advice in that area?
Look, it's a cliche, but honesty is always the best policy. And putting things
okay.
out on the table is best, because what happens is we start to look,
yeah,
and then we come up with it. And
okay.
it becomes an issue, for a lack of better terms, that you now have to deal with. And then and not on our part, because we don't do this, is because then there's speculation. Well, why didn't you tell us?
Right.
Why didn't you do this? Why didn't you sell? So it's better to just lay out on the table, here's who I am. You know, in the right context, though. I mean, if it's the first meeting you have, I wouldn't come walking out and saying, by the way, I never graduated from high school or college. that's not relevant at that point.
Right.
If you're getting down to the point and you start to say, you know, look, we're going to conduct a background investigation on you, and, you know, here's something that we would tell. Ask the question, is there anything you need to tell us now before we start, so that, you know, so we can address it up front? Because what happens a lot with us is we find stuff, and we're in constant communication with our clients. So I can get an assignment this morning. I find something this afternoon. I'm back on the phone with the client this afternoon, and I'm telling them, look, we found this. We corroborated it. You know, do you want us to chase it down? Do you already know about it? And we'll get the response. Yeah, we heard about it. We talked to them about it. We're not worried about that. Keep going. Or, no, we didn't know about it. Put the brakes on. Stop. That's a deal breaker for us. So
right.
laying everything out on the table, as you know, when the time is right, when you're discussing backgrounds, if that's what's coming, lay it out on the table. It you know, if somebody's going to make a decision to not invest with you and your track record is impeccable, no scars, no skeletons, you've always laid everything out on the table, and somebody's going to make a decision not to do that because of some small piece of information, move on. There's
right.
nothing you're going to be able to do by, you know, hiding it. It's still going to come out, and then
sure.
then you look then you look worse.
Right. Okay. So I'm trying to go through some of the tips you provided here today and try to come up with a short checklist. Maybe you could help me of things that hedge fund managers could do, hedge fund managers that are hardworking, genuinely committed to their business, and they're not trying to, you know, game your research, but, you know, maybe they didn't pay attention to some of these things in the past or didn't realize that credit history could ever impact, you know, them running a hedge fund. So I'm trying to come up with a list of a few things that people could do to kind of proactively prepare for this type of intense scrutiny they'll be, you know, cast upon them when they're trying to approach more institutional investors. So, you know, one thing I had was, you know, clean up your social media footprint. If you haven't thought about that in the past, maybe delete some things, make some things private, or not say things in the first place. Maybe develop honest and respectful investor policies, no matter how nasty or unfair an investor, you know, makes claims against you. Always solve things in a way that doesn't, you know, leave them with a horrible taste in their mouth, and treat people fairly. Maybe come up with policies for your whole team in regards to social media and just what you post online and, you know, how you manage your online reputation. And then honesty is always the best policy once you're going through a research or due diligence process. Your credit history could matter, so pay attention to your credit history. And just remember that they might ask for access to that at some point. And then maybe review your own name on Google within the search engine results so you can kind of see, you know, and manage your own online reputation. Maybe there's some things coming up you've kind of forgotten about, and you can kind of prepare, you know, either a way to explain it clearly or a way to clean up that issue so that it's not being posted online as a possible bad thing about you, right? Would that be a good list of things for people to kind of pay attention to?
Yeah, it's a good list. There's two points I'd make, and I think you addressed it on the first one. We were talking about social media. Is, you know, I wouldn't recommend people go back and clean up their social media. I would recommend that they just go back and look at it and know what's there. If
okay.
You posted it, you posted it.
Right.
And be cognizant of what you're putting out in the public record. The other piece I would add to this, in a more of a general thing, is understand what's in your background. You don't want to go and change your background, and you're not going to be able to remove things from the public record.
Sure.
There are things that happened in the Coral Oil where certain things could be sealed, et cetera, but that's not applicable really here. But understand what's in your background. If you understand what's in your background, then you can address it. If there's anything negative in your background, have an answer for it. I wouldn't be automatically on the defensive, but have an answer for it. So it may be in the best interest of fund managers to have a background conducted on themselves and see what's out there, because
right.
may be coming back as related to them because all the identifiers hit, you know, same jurisdiction, this is where they've lived, this is where they grew up, the name is a match, there's matches on dates of birth. It may not be you, and if
right.
it's not, you want to address it and deal with it. You may have the same name as your father, and so, you know, this is recent in one that's ongoing now, where the father and the son have the same name. One's the third, one's the junior. Everything's merged. Credit reports got merged. And they're in the same business. So
wow.
trying to distinguish between the two of them is becoming very difficult. So understand your own background, and where there's fixes that can be made because a credit report got merged with somebody else's. You can fix it. I would recommend everybody, every 6 months, take a look at your credit report.
Sure.
The stuff that's on there, it's either yours or it's not yours. If it's not yours, go through the process that's available to you to get it taken off.
Right.
So just understand your background.
Okay.
And doing a background on yourself or having one done on yourself, I wouldn't, you know, Google's a great tool.
Right.
Recognize, though, that it's a tool. And because it's on Google and because it's on a blog, we look at this every day. We treat this stuff as just pieces of information that either are going to be corroborated or not. And taking something off of a blog, good. Okay, good sources of information. I think they're great. But check it out. Make sure it's right.
Right.
Getting something in a media report, make sure it's correct. So I would just recommend knowing what's out there on yourself.
Okay. All right, great. And then I know that something I recommend for hedge fund managers who have, for example, if they have a 5-year track record and in year two they had some style drift or a couple securities got, you know, a little bit oversized in the portfolio, one of those types of issues that may come up, you might not want to put them within your pitch book because that's your first kind of impression. But I do encourage managers to have like a one-page, you know, if it's a complicated issue, a one-page explanation, maybe a diagram or chart of what happened, why it happened, what was done to correct it, and just a very well thought out answer to that issue, because you know it's going to come up in one of every 4 due diligence processes or conference calls, and you should be able to quickly reply to it with a complete, well-researched and cited answer that's kind of compliance approved. So that might be a little bit overkill for a few of the things that might come up in your background history, but that does remind me of, you know, something we usually suggest to hedge fund managers about their hedge fund overall.
It's a good suggestion. If you know what your background looks like and you have a, and you have something in there that has an explanation, because everything does, think of the way you're going to explain it.
Right.
Bring it out to the open and explain it.
Right. Okay. So we're getting down to the end of the interview here, but our program, our team has spent over 100 hours putting it together and making sure that, you know, we covered a lot of best practices, but then also interviewed a lot of experts in hedge fund marketing. And what we're trying to do is make sure that every person that comes to our event or that buys this program gets at least $10,000 worth of value, whether that's saving $10,000 in consulting fees or saving $10,000 worth of their time or raising enough money that it makes them $10,000 at least. That's kind of our internal goal here. So I'm just wondering, from your perspective, you've looked at a lot of hedge fund managers, and I'm wondering if you have one tip that, you know, if you're looking to raise institutional capital now or sometime in the near future, that one tip alone could be worth almost $10,000 because it's so valuable to remember and stick to as long as you're running a hedge fund or as long as you're, you know, coaching hedge fund managers that are raising capital. I was wondering, do you have one tip that maybe you've already said it once today, or maybe it's something you haven't had a chance to say it today, but do you have one really powerful tip that people should really take away from this interview?
The best thing, and I'm going to speak solely in the area of backgrounds and investigations, is sincerity and honesty, ethics and integrity. You have, if you don't have ethics, you don't have integrity, and you're not honest and you're not sincere in your dealings with other people, you may have a short-term gain. Mm-hmm. It will not be a long-term gain. You may recognize something early. You may recognize a benefit early on from being a little unethical or fudging your integrity a little bit. But
yeah.
I think in the long term, it will do nothing more than hurt you. It'll come back in some way, and it'll come back probably in stronger than it did had you just been open, honest, sincere, ethical, and shown integrity.
Okay.
Integrity. If you're ethical and you have integrity, you can go to bed every night and go to sleep and wake up in the morning and not have any worries.
Yeah, that's a great piece of advice, and I love it because it's completely different than all of the other number one pieces of advice we've gotten. I heard a quote recently. I can't remember who it's from, but it says that you know, if you live life the easy way, then life is hard. If you live life the hard way, then life is easy. And I think it's an easy way to kind of remember, you know, what seems great short term is often not the best thing long term, and kind of goes in line with acting with integrity. It's not always the easiest to swallow right now, but you know, in the long term, if you cut corners, you'll kind of shoot yourself in the foot. So,
that's correct.
Great. All right. Well, I just want to thank you again for your time, Tim, and everybody who's listening to this call. If you'd like to learn more about Tim Moore or his firm's practice, again, he's the head of investigative due diligence and that practice at BDO Consulting. And their website URL, if you want to check them out, is BDOConsulting.com. So thanks again for your time, Tim, and we really appreciate all the advice you shared with us here today.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.